This is a reading of The Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Tarka Trilogy, by Richard S. Tuttle. Chapter 16, The Pass. David peered over the edge of the cliff at the 30,000 goblins that were mobilizing for their attack. The king's army was scattered around the countryside and was outnumbered 3-1. The goblins below were heading straight for the pass. The corporal was one of 1,000 red swords assigned to the heights of the mountain pass, armed with fire glue. The red swords were evenly divided between the east peaks and the west peaks. Their job was to create a flaming inferno in the mountain pass itself. The inferno would be timed to catch as many goblins as possible in the first wave, as they rushed toward the southern exit from the pass. His old sergeant Fergie guarded this exit. Fergie had 1,000 red swords with him to guard the southern exit from the mountain pass. 20 of Oscar's wagons were being used to block the exit from the pass. Behind the wagons, the red swords waited for the advancing army. Fergie knew the first wave of goblins would be decimated, but the element of surprise would be quickly lost. If the goblins overran his position, the kingdom was in peril. There were no troops between him and Taggart. General Clark had come up with a brilliant plan, but it required the use of the entire king's army. There would be no reserves to fall back on. The general expected the goblin army to get bogged down in the pass and be scorched from above. He knew that eventually the goblins would send a sizable portion of their force around the mountains to attack Fergie's position from the west, breaking the human barricade. He was ready for such a move. Mitar sat with his back to a large rock. He was one of several red swords who had been added to the 3,000 army troops located halfway between Fergie and Bordone. The wait was boring, but it gave him time to reflect on his short life before the 10,000 to 15,000 goblins came charging at him. The army's position was fortified with fallen trees. When the goblins came, 3,000 archers would be waiting. Given time, the goblins would overwhelm their position. But if the general's plan held, the goblins would not be given that time. The attacking forces, led by Colonel Gregor, would close in from the goblins' rear, and the ghastly foreign force would be caught between two armies. Colonel Gregor sat on the deck of the Pegasus, Oscar's flagship. The Pegasus was one of Oscar's fleet of 15 ships off the coast of Bordone. Bordone had been evacuated, and the passing goblins would not give it a second glance. The 15 ships were far enough offshore not to be noticed. Each ship was crammed with 200 soldiers waiting for the expected goblins to pass. 20 of Oscar's wagons were hidden in town at his depot and in the old Tulik depot. The colonel realized that the timing was going to be crucial to avoid losing the protective force between Fergie and Bordone. As soon as the last of the goblin army passed by Bordone, the ships had to get to shore and unload their troops. A channel wide enough for two ships had been plowed through the soft mud. Each ship would have to get to shore, unload its troops, and get back out to sea while the next ship was coming in. The troops from the first two ships had to get the wagons hitched up and proceed east after the goblins. The rest of the troops would be on foot. The wagons would be used as a barricade to trap the goblins between the two armies. This was the most crucial part of the general's plan. If the goblins attacked before the wagons were set up, the western force could be wiped out. Alex was cold. He was part of a force of 1,000 red swords and 2,000 army troops that were positioned north of the boulders. He endured a long journey to get to his current position, hidden in a canyon east of the pass. Alex was part of a force that came up the east coast of Tarka to Rivers Run. It was a small force used to transport wagons and horses to the northland. They were needed to break up the ice on the Elga River so the Kingdom Navy ships could bring in the rest of the force. The ships sailed up the coast from Taggart to the Theiss River. They proceeded up the Theiss River to the Elga River and went as far south as the ships could go. The army then proceeded overland to the boulders and crept westward as far as they dared. They filled the canyons and waited without the benefit of campfires. They were not able to hunt for food and had to depend on the provisions brought in by the wagons. This portion of the general's plan called for mounted troops, and they would engage once the northern entrance to the pass was clear. This army was the back door that would trap the goblins in the pass to be devastated by the archers from above. Corporal David Jane shouted, "They're coming! The first wave has just reached Fergie's position." David and the other Red Swords started raining fire glue laced arrows down at the goblins. It was an awesome sight. 1,000 arrows streaking downward and igniting the goblin forces. From the southern exit, the leading goblins were under fire from Fergie's force. 2,000 Red Sword archers were raining death upon the goblins. Even a non-lethal hit on a goblin would put him out of the fight as he tried to extinguish the fire, which was eating through his flesh. The goblins were adaptable, though. They ran through the pass with shields raised over their heads, and lowered them only when they came within range of Fergie's men. Still, the pass became a killing ground, and the pile of burning goblin bodies was making it difficult for the remaining forces to run through the valley. As expected, half of the goblins broke off and headed west. What was unexpected was that the goblins were climbing the mountains to the sides of the pass. They intended to take out the Red Sword archers who were above the pass. They would never reach their goal, but they would divert enough of the archers to lessen the firing into the pass and put more pressure on Fergie's forces. One of the forward goblins retrieved a freshly fired flaming arrow and used it to ignite one of Fergie's wagons. Soon other goblins were mimicking the act, and Fergie's barrier was ablaze. Fergie's forces had to back up to avoid the intense heat from the burning wagons. The goblins had succeeded in destroying Fergie's cover, but they had also created a flaming barricade that they could not cross until the flames died out. In the meantime, they were being cut down in the pass, and their burning bodies were mounting into another barrier. The goblins suddenly reversed course and did something that no one expected. They headed east. It was a considerable distance east to the next pass, but Fergie's forces could not abandon their position for fear that the goblins would turn around again. Lieutenant J. Orrin was in charge of the Eastern King's army. He was notified by a lookout that the goblins were heading east and ordered a barrier erected with the supply wagons. The 2,000 regular army formed up behind the barricade while the Red Swords under Sergeant Ray Donovan mounted their horses and headed north. Alex had never actually been in battle on horseback, but he had been training for this moment for the last several months. Sergeant Donovan led the cavalry in a wide sweep designed to attack the rearmost goblin attackers, while the regular army used fire glue arrows on those advancing towards the wagons. Alex and the rest of the Red Swords followed Sergeant Donovan into the ranks of the goblins. Some of the goblins brought their bows to bear on the attacking cavalry and succeeded in downing several dozen Red Swords, but they were ill-prepared to defend themselves when the horses charged into their ranks. Alex hoisted his jeweled sword for its first test of battle. Geneva had warned Alex not to use the sword in practice, and he had refrained. Now he would find out what made the sword so special. Alex swung at his first goblin, and the sword sliced through the goblin's shield and severed his arm. Alex had little time to reflect on the sharpness of the sword, as he was quickly being surrounded, as were the other Red Swords. Alex kept swinging and killing goblins. He knew the sword was heavy from carrying it, but now it seemed to weigh almost nothing. The swings were effortless, and he found that he could kill a goblin with the forward stroke and another with his backward stroke. The Red Swords were making a dent in the goblin rear, but it was at a heavy cost. Alex saw several men fall near him, including Sergeant Donovan. The goblins attacking the wagon barricade decided to reverse direction and headed west towards the Red Sword cavalry. A rider from Lieutenant Orrin arrived and ordered the cavalry to disengage. The Red Swords broke and galloped north, swinging wide to get back to the wagons. When they arrived back at the barricade, they were 600 men short. The attack had been very costly, but they had reversed the goblin army. Alex dismounted and checked his horse. Finding no cuts, he led the horse to the canyon they were using as a corral. Lieutenant Oren was checking the returning riders and directed the wounded to a makeshift hospital the Army had set up. "Corporal Torque," he asked, "the infirmary is in the next canyon. Do you need help getting there?" Confused, Alex answered, "Lieutenant, I am not injured. Do you wish me to help care for the wounded?" One of the other Red Swords laughed and stated, "Lieutenant, Torque's not wounded. That's goblin blood. If you could arrange for the goblins to stand in single file, Alex will cut them all down for you." Alex looked at his arms and legs. They were soaked with blood, and he laughed. He could see why the lieutenant was concerned. "I guess I should get cleaned up," he chuckled. "Alex, are these the only men returning?" "Yes, sir. We killed an awful lot of them and made them turn back, but it was costly. We lost a lot of good men today, sir, including Sergeant Donovan." "Well, Alex, the day is not over yet. As soon as the wounded are taken to the infirmary, we are giving chase. The goblins will be heading for the pass again, and we still have our part to play in that battle." "I know, sir. The swords will do their part, Lieutenant," Alex replied. "Who's in command of the Red Swords right now?" the lieutenant asked. "I'm not sure, sir. Sergeant Chivo should be, but I haven't seen him among the returning." The lieutenant reviewed the remaining Red Swords. "Alex, I'm promoting you to sergeant. Have your men mounted and ready to move in 15 minutes. My men will be leaving in 5 minutes, but you needn't move hard to overtake us. We want the goblins well into the pass before we attack." "Yes, sir, and thank you, sir. We will hold the creatures in the pass until you have your line set up." Alex left to talk with his men. He informed them of his orders. There was a lot of congratulations for Alex, sorrows for the men lost, and weariness from the battle. But the overriding emotion was one of vengeance for Sergeant Donovan and the other Red Swords lost in battle. Alex had no doubt that their vengeance would be satisfied on the goblins soon. Colonel Gregor was pleased. The trap for the goblins east of Borden had been sprung perfectly. The goblins were trapped between 2 3,000-man armies. They were still outnumbered 2-1, but the goblins were totally confused. They had expected to attack 1,000 men from the rear, and they were now unsure of which way to go. The barrage of 6,000 archers and fire glue arrows was decimating the goblins. The king's army was also taking a beating, but most of those struck were injured, not dead. Once a goblin was struck, he died. Some of the goblins tried climbing the mountains while others fled south. The colonel had a small detachment of cavalry to engage those that were heading south. As long as it was not a full route south, the goblins would be contained and destroyed. Alex led the Red Swords charging into the northern entrance of the pass. His force ran into the rear of the goblin army and attacked, steel clashing with steel. Lieutenant Oren ordered the wagons to seal off the mouth of the pass, and half of his infantry surged into the pass. The other half would be held in reserve, bows ready in case of a retreat. Alex and his men slashed their way through the enemy until they were almost halfway through the pass. There they held until the infantry could catch up. After half of Lieutenant Oren's men were out of sight, the Yaki attacked. They had been lying in wait in the woods north of the pass. Now they were attacking Lieutenant Oren's men from behind. The men were forced to turn their backs to the wagons and fight the larger Yaki force. Fergie no longer had his wagon barricade, and the rush of goblins was taking its toll. Some of the goblins were reaching his front lines, and archers were forced to draw steel. The rush of goblins continued, and Fergie's line was broken. Goblins were charging south, finally free of the death trap the pass had become. Standing atop one of the large peaks, Egum raised his staff. He had been observing the battle and not interfering, because his use of magic was sure to alert Sarek. He could observe no longer. He was sure that he had just ordered his own death, but he could not stand idly by and let goblins into the lower kingdom. He pointed his staff at the enemy force that had broken through Fergie's line. The valley floor erupted in great flame and disappeared along with 1,000 goblins. For a moment, Fergie couldn't believe his eyes. Then he quickly ordered the line closed to prevent further goblins from escaping the pass. Sarek jumped from his chair. The vibrations were too strong to be ignored. Someone of great skill was casting in the Boulder Mountains, but who? Geneva was still here. Egam and Kirsta were dead. Mustar should not be involved. Gal'dan, possibly. But it was unlike the elves to interfere in kingdom affairs unless, of course, the goblins had attacked them. Perhaps there was another magician of extraordinary skill who his black devils had missed. He had to investigate. Sarek sent a mind call to his black devils to assemble. The raven flew off to the boulders. Geneva had felt it also. She had been in the library delving into Sarek's treasured volumes. She knew it had to be Egam. The spring thaw must have reached the pass, which meant the battle was underway. Egam would not have interrupted, unless it was going poorly. She had to get there and deal with Sarek. She turned, and Mordek stood there smiling. "Going somewhere, princess?" "Sarek may need our help," she said. "A likely story. I didn't think you had the power to extinguish Egam. I knew it was a hoax." Geneva did not have time to deal with this moron. She tossed a freeze ball at Mordek and headed for the window. The freeze ball would not kill Mordek, but it would keep him off her back until she dealt with Sarek. She could come back and deal with Mordek later. The eagle took to the air. Egam turned and sent a huge fireball into the Aki. He enjoyed the way they burst into flames. He followed it up with another. He knew his time was limited, and he needed to do as much damage as possible, quickly. The goblins in the pass were terrified. They had watched 1,000 of their army devoured by the earth. They turned north and charged Alex's men. Alex ordered his men to dismount and join the regular army infantry. They formed a mass in the gorge, which the goblins could not pass. The two armies met, and blood started flowing. Sarek landed on Kalis Mountain. He surveyed the various battles and chose Colonel Gregor's force for his gift. Sarek raised his arms and issued an incantation, an old favorite that Geneva had used a couple of months earlier. Slabs of the mountains began to rain down on the colonel's men. Satisfied that he had evened the odds a little, he turned his attention to the other magician. He was horrified to recognize Egam, that which Geneva had tricked him. She would die for this. He hurled a large fireball at Egam, hoping to catch him off guard. Egam had been expecting an attack and easily deflected the missile. Egam returned a rock mine, not aimed at Sarek, but the peak he was standing on. Sarek bent the projectile and directed it towards the red swords and the peaks over the pass. Hundreds of bodies went flying into the pass. Egam needed to get the battle away from the kingdom troops. He flew north to a large clear field well away from the fighting. Sarek followed and issued a powerful spell. All around him, black devils appeared. He then turned his attention to Egam. The goblins that had been pinned down by Colonel Gregor's army surged westward through the king's army. They were more intent on escaping the trap than engaging the army. They headed for Bordeaux with the king's army following. Alex and his men were slowly hacking their way through the goblin ranks when the explosion above them threw red swords down onto the goblins. Jars of fire glue accompanied the flight of the red swords, and the valley before Alex erupted into an inferno hot enough to crack the walls of the pass. Without an enemy to fight, Alex turned his men around and returned to Lieutenant Orin to see the Yaki being beaten back. Geneva landed to Sarek's north. With Egam to the east, it would defy Sarek's attention. Egam's protective ward was weakening, and Geneva hurled spell after spell at Sarek to draw his attention away from Egam. A black dove flew into a field to the west of Sarek and materialized as Kirsta. Sarek looked around and realized how badly he had been suckered. He was now facing 3 master magicians, but he knew they were no match for him. He would kill them all. Fireballs, freeze balls, lightning bolts, and earthquakes were all being hurled at Sarek. He laughed. The black devils he had summoned were there to protect him. He had a ring of 4 black devils around him whose job was to continually strengthen his ward of protection. 16 magicians around them provided the wards for the first 4. Another 100 completed his ring of safety. Their task was to protect the 16 and themselves. Sarek's protective ring would last long after the 3 kingdom mages were dead. Sarek alternated his casting at each of his enemies. He delighted in seeing their protective wards weakening. Geneva was obviously the strongest, but he would savor her death after he had finished the other 2. Geneva could see that Sarek had held spells secret from her. She had intentionally searched out the ward spells in his library so that she would be able to pierce them. The wards he was using now had not been found in his library. She hadn't been as successful in tricking him as she had thought. She might end up paying dearly for her mistake. She could see Egum's shields weakening, Kirsta's as well. She hadn't expected Kirsta and was pleased to see her. It was a sign that Kirsta did not succumb to the dark side after all. Geneva was afraid she might follow in Kirsta's footsteps and succumbing to the evil of magic. But now she realized that Hobbes must be wrong. The trip to the dark side was one of will, not fate. Egum took the hit from a bolt of lightning and flew through the air. Darkness came to him, and Egum was no longer in the battle. Sarek smiled. So the old fool was the first to go. He had been sure that Kirsta would have fallen first. No matter. She would be next. He could not detect any weakening of Geneva's ward yet. She was indeed a powerful foe. A shame, really. He had looked forward to working with her. Now he must kill her. Several dozen of his outer ring had died, but there was no weakening of his ward. He could go on for hours like this. Geneva was feeling the strain of the prolonged attack. She knew that if they kept attacking like they were, Sarek was sure to win, but she must find a way to kill him. She watched as Kirsta was next to fly backwards, smashing her back against a rock. She knew now that she could not defeat Sarek. She had not had enough time to prepare, and Sarek would not die today. There was only one thing left for her to do, and she wasn't sure if it was a good idea. When she thought about it, there really was no choice. If she died next, the entire kingdom's army would feel Sarek's wrath. Geneva drew from all her strength, her shield of protection weakening as she concentrated. She struggled to remember the words from the origin scroll as she began the incantation. Sarek's blows were rattling her now. She could not complete this powerful spell and still maintain full protection of her ward. At last she completed the spell, and Sarek and his black devils disappeared. Mentally drained and exhausted, she collapsed. When she awoke, Alex was shaking her. She sat up and looked around. Sarek and his henchmen were gone. Egum was sitting nearby, but looked extremely ill. She looked for Kirsta, and saw her in the same position as when she had been thrown. Geneva got up and unsteadily hobbled over to Kirsta. "Kirsta," she began, "what can we do for you? Where does it pain you?" "Geneva, what did you do to them? Where have they gone?" Alex helped Egum over to the 2 women. He did not want to miss the explanation for Sarek's disappearance. "They've gone to another universe," Geneva explained. "I could not defeat Sarek, and I had no other choice. I'm not sure that I understand the ramifications of my act. I only know that I had to move them to save the kingdom." "But the origin scroll," quizzed Kirsta. "How did you find it?" "I looked where it had to be. It's not important now. You are all that is important to me now," Geneva sobbed. Kirsta looked up with tears in her eyes. "Then you know it all?" "I think so," replied Geneva. "It was Sarek, wasn't it?" "Yes," answered Kirsta. "It was. I have behaved so horribly, Geneva. Can you ever forgive me? It's not important now, Geneva said. What is important is that you get well. I want to spend more time with you on your island paradise, just the two of us, with no great crisis pending. We'll spend years together and make up for lost time. Kirsta shook her head and blood poured out of her mouth. No, Geneva, this is not to be. I have reached the end of my time, and even your skills cannot alter my destiny. I will leave you soon. Please find it in your heart to understand and forgive me.
No, Geneva protested. You cannot abandon me again, Mother. I will take care of you, please. I do understand, and I do forgive you, but don't leave me again. I've just found you in.
And Kirsta died. Geneva cradled her mother's head and cried.